This video is made possible thanks to the support of my Patreons. If you would like to join my Patreon with the live streams, the Discord chat, exclusive content and more, then you'll find a link in the description box. Patreon is the most effective way of supporting me and my team in the work we do. So if you find the videos valuable in any way, then please do consider joining us on Patreon. Picture this, a sea of teenagers and 20-somethings in Morocco chanting La Santé avant le foot, health before football, while waving the Straw Hat pirate flag of Monkey D. Luffy. Flip the continent and you'll find kids in Madagascar blocking streets with banners saying light and water are rights. In Indonesia, huge crowds attack malls, symbols of consumer capitalism, and in Nepal, students burn the parliament to protest a government drowning in corruption scandals and replaced it with a new leader elected on Discord. It's 2025 and Gen Z is not just on TikTok or making reels, though we're doing that too. They're touching grass. They're out in the streets in numbers big enough to shake governments and make us Westerners look a bit chill.
These climate activists rode bicycles around an airport runway as security chased them. Protesters from Greenpeace and the Extinction Rebellion biked around a part of Amsterdam's Schiphol Airport, attempting to prevent planes from taking off.
What's happening right now around the world looks nothing like your parents' protest movements. Forget the union bosses with megaphones and cheap deafening sound systems, or the political parties with nicely printed banners. These uprisings are messy, they're spontaneous, and they are horizontal. They are grounded in real daily struggles, like a healthcare system that doesn't work, blackouts that never end, cycles of corruption, favorable treatments for NAPO kids, and restrictions on means of communication. From Morocco to Madagascar, Nepal to Indonesia, these movements are both unique and interconnected. They inspire each other, they relate to each other through the methods they use, the symbol they mobilize. And today, I want to give them the attention they deserve. I want to challenge unfair representations in corporate media and just understand what is going on with Gen Z globally. Is this the start of something bigger? My name's Alice. Welcome or welcome back to my channel. The roots of the movements. So protests usually happen when enough is enough. In Morocco, the spark was the government's obsession with the 2030 FIFA World Cup. Billions are being poured into stadiums and infrastructure to impress FIFA executives. Meanwhile, hospitals are collapsing. In just 1 week, 8 women died as a result of cesarean birth. Enough is enough. الناس كيطلبوا مدارس ومستشفيات ما كيطلبوش شي حاجه مستحيله شي حاجه اللي ضروري خصها تكون في المغرب الناس ما فاهمينش هادشي فين هي الحكومه في هادشي. So a movement was born. It's called Gen Z 212, a reference to the generation of young people born between 1997 and 2010, plus the country's international dialing code 212. Their rallying cry: health before the World Cup. The Moroccan youth doesn't want the World Cup if it comes at the cost of their relatives' health. The contrast between glossy renders of futuristic stadiums splashed across state TV and an 8-hour wait to hopefully get medical treatment is too hard to swallow. It reminds us of the videos comparing the Met Gala to whatever horror is happening somewhere else in the world, Palestine, Congo, Sudan, etc. Now, Gen Z 212 started with student marches in Casablanca and Rabat. Within days, clips of water cannons and kids being thrown into police vans turned the protest into a generational moment. It confirmed what many already assumed, that the government seemed more interested in impressing FIFA than protecting its own citizens. Now, keep in mind, this wasn't Morocco's first youth revolt. The 2011 Arab Spring and the 2017 Rif protests also marked the history of the country. In a similar manner, Gen Z 212 is built to be copied. It's a call for young people around the world to stand up against their corrupt government with the tools they have. Now jump to Antananarivo, Madagascar's capital. Picture studying for exam by candlelight because the power's out. Or going 3 days without running water. That's what we're talking about. And it's not just an individual inconvenience, it's an entire society on pause. Hospitals can't function, schools can't function, students can't study, workers can't properly do their jobs. So once again, young people hit the streets with signs reading electricity is not a luxury and water is life, not politics. Those blackouts are basically shorthand for decades of corruption and neglect by the political class. Corruption was also at the heart of Gen Z's protests in Nepal. The scandal, billions of rupees disappearing into the hands of the elite. Also politicians buying luxury properties abroad while unemployment and poverty soared at home. This picture, for example, circulated a lot on social media. This is the son of a Nepalese politician standing next to what looks like a Christmas tree made of bags and boxes of luxury brands. In Kathmandu, the capital city, the fury exploded into mass rallies and effigy burnings. Students chanted, "You stole our future," in the streets. The end of the story, you know it already. The parliament burned and protesters put forward a name, Sushila Karki, as the temporary prime minister before new elections are organized. Finally, Indonesia. It started with rising prices and inequality, but within weeks, the marches snowballed into a national uprising. Reporters described scenes of students, precarious workers, and rural youth flooding Jakarta's avenues, with TikTok calls to action turning into overnight rallies. The targets weren't random. Protesters stormed malls, damaged luxury billboards, and blockaded government offices. The state responded with tear gas, curfews, and even live ammunition in some regions. Yet the movement only grew. Viral footage of kids coughing through tear gas clouds gained millions of views, pulling more into the streets. We'll get to the role of social media in just a few minutes. But for Indonesia's youth, the protests were about fairness. Not ideology, not parties, just a deep sense that the system was rigged. Morocco, Madagascar, Nepal, or Indonesia, these countries have caught our attention in the last month or so. They've been portrayed by some as riots led by chronically online kids who refuse to have their social media taken away from them by the government. But it's obviously a bit more complex than that. In fact, the reactions to the news and videos reaching us are relatively positive. Some people feel inspired, others view the protest as cathartic, not because they aspire to be politically violent, but rather because young people are thirsty for social justice, but they feel powerless. The Gen Z protests aren't just entertainment on our phones. They act like a mirror. They force us to wrestle with what is wrong about our societies, what we deserve, and what we should be fighting for. Make it real. If you're trying to understand how these movements function, stop looking for leaders. There aren't any, and that's by design. Gen Z 212 in Morocco turned down offers from opposition parties to support the marches. In Nepal, protesters booed when politician leaders tried to show up. In Madagascar, marches spread through word of mouth and group chats, not unions. In Indonesia, the calendar was chaotic. One viral video could bring thousands into the streets overnight. For Gen Z protesters, vertical structures of power, so structures that are based on hierarchies, are what brought their societies to chaos. They grew up watching parties sell out, unions stagnate, and charismatic leaders get corrupted. So they prefer horizontalism. No one at the top, everyone at the core. Now, horizontalism has pros and cons. I was recently reporting on another horizontal movement happening in France, the Let's Block Everything movement, inspired by the former Yellow Vest movement. Let's Block Everything wasn't attached to any political party. It was a citizen-led movement with independent actions organized across the country. The various Gen Z movements happening in the last months echo that structure too. They are mostly concentrated in big city centers, that's true, but they remain spontaneous and open to everyone who is angry and wants to show it. The spontaneity of horizontal movements is what allows them to take police forces by surprise. You see, when actions are planned publicly and organized by trusted institutions like trade unions or political parties, police forces can also better prepare themselves. Where they need to go, how many people they should mobilize. We saw in the videos of the Gen Z protests how police forces were struggling to contain the youth. So that's one thing that comes with horizontalism. It's more difficult to handle for police forces. On the other hand, the unpredictability of those movements can lead to police forces overreacting or justifying the use of disproportionate force against protesters. In Nepal, for example, 19 protesters were killed. Hundreds were hurt. So these protests are riskier, more dangerous. Another feature of horizontal movements is their ability to mobilize across political differences. We know it. As soon as a political party or group attaches itself to a protest movement, those who don't feel aligned with the party's ideology can decide to leave the movement altogether. That's why, as we mentioned at the beginning, young organizers explicitly refused the support of established opposition parties. Their reasoning was to keep the protests from being instrumentalized by traditional political actors, leading to division within the movement. On the other hand, though, political diversity can lead to a lack of clarity in the goals and values of the movement. I'll use the example of the yellow vests in France a few years ago. While protesters agreed that the key problem was affordability, some protesters and organizers also argued that immigration was a problem, that migrants are taking white working classes' jobs. I made a video about it. It is not scientifically true. But still, the question here is, do we accept that there are opposite views coexisting in the movement, or do we establish a clear set of values? That question can be asked in the context of the Gen Z protests. Some journalists have raised issues regarding some of the things that are said by organizers and protesters, instances of racism, xenophobia. So it's important to keep that in mind and remain critical of those imperfect movements, seeing the good and the bad sides, and not fetishize them too much, because that's good for no one. Another disadvantage of the lack of established structures to support the movement is that it can lead to an overnight collapse. Its survival depends on people showing up, on creating new actions, on getting more people on board, on circulating the information effectively. But in the case of the Gen Z protesters, the structure of traditional protest was actually replaced by a different type of structure, namely digital infrastructures. So where does coordination happen? Online? But not just Twitter or Facebook, we're talking Discord servers, TikTok accounts that drop protest info between two slob videos, WhatsApp and Telegram groups with thousands of members. In Nepal, it was on a Discord server that 10,000 Nepalese decided who their next leader would be. The whole thing was put together by Hami Nepal, a Gen Z collective at the heart of the protests, with more than 160,000 people in their ranks. Inside the channel, Youth Against Corruption members jumped into a heated debate about who should run the country. The server got so packed that thousands more had to go on a YouTube stream running on the side. For hours, the chat scrolled non-stop with protest leaders answering questions, with users throwing out names of potential prime ministers, and moderators trying to keep the chaos semi-manageable. By the end of it, the crowd had rallied behind one choice: Sushila Kalki, a 73-year-old former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, known as someone not deeply tied to party politics and relatively neutral, credible and anti-corruption. And there you go, she was sworn in as Nepal's temporary prime minister just days later. Now, those digital infrastructures are also met with new forms of digital authoritarianism. I talked about this in depth in my video on banning social media. Governments have used social media shutdowns to contain protest movements and identify their organizers. The videos shared online can be used by authorities to track down people. That's why I recommend that if you go to a protest, even a peaceful one, you might want to be careful about who and what you film or who you expose online. The symbols of Gen Z protests. Every protest generation has its series of symbols. Gen Z chose Monkey D. Luffy. In Morocco, Madagascar, Nepal, and Indonesia, you'll see the straw hat skull flag flying over marches. As one Moroccan protester told a media part reporter, quote, "Luffy doesn't obey kings, neither do we." For those of you who don't know, Luffy is a pirate who refuses the status quo. He isn't after gold or power or revenge. His whole mission is about freedom, building his own crew, creating bonds on his own terms, and punching through any authority that tries to tame him. He's stubborn to the point of absurdity, but that stubbornness is precisely what turns him into a liberator. For Gen Z protesters, many of whom grew up watching One Piece dubbed on TV or poorly subtitled on dodgy websites, like it was the case for me, Luffy is a perfect symbol for their own fight. Like them, he doesn't trust institutions. Like them, he laughs at respectability politics. And like them, he's driven more by community and loyalty than by ideology in the traditional sense. But there's also an irony element. Waving a Luffy flag is way funnier and more viral than holding up the old Guy Fawkes mask or a Che Guevara t-shirt. In fact, the Gen Z protesters have gained popularity online precisely because they use symbols that are recognizable around the world by anyone. You don't have to know much about politics to know who Luffy is or what Gen Z means. Now, all these protest movements may be happening thousands of kilometers away from us, but they are built to have international appeal. Their recognizable symbols make them relatable to young individuals around the globalized world. They are built to be replicable. So what's happening here? A generation dismissed as screen addicted and apathetic is instead becoming the most rebellious cohort in decades. Their demands are pretty basic. Water, electricity, healthcare, honesty, but their methods, social media virality, horizontalism, anime flags, are reshaping protest culture. Now, will they build lasting political power? It's not sure yet. Like other youth movements in the past, the symbolism and emotions of the protests stick in the minds of people worldwide. What comes after there is often overlooked. Who knows if Sushila Kalki is going to be different from the other ones? My pragmatism here comes from my experience as a French person. I mean, as you probably know, France has its share of protests. In 2024, for example, the world saw us having our parliament dissolved and new elections being called in a gesture that, on paper, favored the far right, leading in polls. But then the left built a coalition and strategized the election to win most seats in parliament in just 3 weeks. Oftentimes when I meet people outside of France who are into politics, they mention this recent event saying something like, "Whoa, that's great what your country did, defy the odds and make the left win." What they don't know is that despite that win, Macron, our president, hasn't yet appointed a left-wing prime minister, like he was supposed to do. Instead, he appointed centrists and conservatives who all got kicked out by the parliament. People don't know that. What they remember is the protests, the energy, the symbolism of French people standing up against their elites. In his book, If We Burn, one of my favorite books of 2024, journalist Vincent Bevins saw similar shortcomings in the context of what we know as the Arab Spring and other horizontal youth-led movements of the 2010s. This is obviously relevant to the Gen Z protests. He wondered how the short-term victories didn't settle into long-term gains. He noticed that too often, protest movements challenged the powers in place to the point of removing them, but didn't manage to seize that power. Bevins concludes that this was the paradox of horizontal revolts. They were brilliant at tearing down power, but too often left a vacuum behind. Quote, "The throne was empty, and someone else sat on it." That warning hangs over today's Gen Z uprisings too. And it hangs over any movement that may prolong them. What are your thoughts on these recent events? What do you think about the structure of protest, the horizontal structure, the symbolism as well of it? Share your thoughts in the comment section. And if you enjoyed this video, don't forget to like, to subscribe, and to support my work on Patreon. And a special mention for my top tier patrons: Nofol Shamari, Fred, Hongqing Huang, Paul-Louis Agenot, Patrick Button, Jeff Lee, Yilan, Taya Matin, Nick, Brandon, Jem Siddle, Ojual, Pablo, Patrick, Boris, Ria, Corey G, Tristan, Christopher, Ian, Donage, Alex, Manuel, Christopher France, and Perry. And thank you to the other ones who prefer to stay anonymous. That's it for me. That's it for today. I'll see you very, very soon. Salut!